Call to order the Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors meeting today, September 11, 2012. We're going to start with the Pledge of Allegiance, and we're going to have a moment of silence. Today's the 11th anniversary of 9/11, and we're going to have a moment of silence for the nearly 3,000 people who civilians who've lost their lives, as well as all the men and women who have lost their lives in protecting our freedom since then. So we'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
And now a moment of silence. Thank you. Okay, we're going to start this morning with public comment period. It's time on the agenda when anybody can address this board on any item within our purview that is not on today's agenda. I have two specific requests to speak. We'll start with them. First is Susan Medina Beasley. Good morning.
And forgive me, but we're going to have a lesson today. It's Susan Mendieta Beasley. And we can all learn names like that when we go to the International Festival, because we're all going to learn about one another. Say, gotcha, huh?
You did.
And then also, just a little fun this morning. I know it's a very special day in our country, and thank you for the moment of silence. But, you know, I always get so excited and so emotional about the International Festival. And today I'm an international fashionista because I am wearing a little something from Guatemala. It's a little traditional, a little bit modern. And I'm showing it off for everyone because, again, at the festival, we get to learn about one another when we see our friends from Cambodia, we see our friends from China, we see our friends from the Philippines, and they look a little different because they're wearing their native dress. And how spectacular is that for families and children to come on Saturday, October 6th, and learn about each other that way? And I always tell everyone, it's so much fun. Children and families don't realize they're learning. And it's an opportunity for you to learn also about history, culture, art, geography at the International Festival. And I'm here to invite all of you, all of Stanislaus County, and you, the members of the leadership and the Board of Supervisors, on Saturday, October 6th, 11 to 5 p.m., downtown Modesto at the Gallo Arts Center. And it's absolutely free. We have worked very, very hard to keep this event free. No tickets are needed to go into the Gallo Center. There are food and snack items available for purchase, which is always a delight because you always have to pick a little this, a little that, and another great way to learn about each other. And the festival has a twofold mission. It's we celebrate and teach one another about our cultures throughout the county, but we also celebrate what we have in common, what we share, our shared American heritage. And I hope that you will all be able to join us on Saturday, October 6th. It's always wonderful to have someone there from Board of Supervisors. I also want to say thank you very much because we've had a long relationship with you in support, whether that's been moral support. Sometimes it's been financial in the good old days, but it's wonderful that we have your support and that we're able to use our beautiful facilities. I thank you very much, and I look forward to seeing you. And you, I think at each of your seats there are flyers. Please let us know if you'll be coming, and we will be sure to save you a seat at the grand opening, and we'll see you at 11 a.m. sharp. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Next is Deborah Harper. Good morning, Deborah. She's going to get a mic for you here. There we go.
My name is Deborah Harper, and I currently reside in Modesto, but I'm currently homeless. I have a 9-page resume. I've worked in other counties, other areas in the state of California, and I have been oppressed completely and thoroughly in the county of Stanislaus County. Now, I'm here to talk today to thank the new chair of the law library, who has reinstated me and my privileges at the Stanislaus County Law Library when I was falsely suspended. Now, this is a snowball effect. I'm on my fourth suspension from the Stanislaus County Public Library. This is a strictly personal venue that employees have used to facilitate publicly humiliating me, admonishing me, false information year after year after year, quoting things that I said, ignoring the accurate information for four suspensions. I cannot use the public library, which started this totally hideous, devastating attack on my character and my ability to function and my credibility in the community. This has snowballed into the inability to get the appropriate health care. Now, you mentioned that we can talk about any issue in public venue. And I've peacefully and discreetly asked if I could show two CDs. I have a comparison x-ray of a chest x-ray, comparison from 06208 to 42712. I was told that this wasn't possible, but Monica said that she's also not part of the decision-making process. So I want to verify on record whether I can show the CD or not.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, we would recommend not showing the CD as it shows privileged medical information that's not appropriate for public viewing.
Okay, thank you. Any x-ray is totally available and appropriate for public viewing, but it's a business decision at this point, having to do with statutes and clear error. Thank you. In the process of getting reinstated into the law library, in writing, I'm told that all my previous behavior, which was put on appeal, but I was unable to appeal because I was unable to attend the appeal meeting because nobody told me I was on the agenda. Our new chair was sweet enough to put me on the agenda, communicate to me that I was on agenda. So there was actually no appeal for that. So any previous behavior was false and not appealed at. So they're holding, the chair is now holding that false, inappropriate behavior over my head. So if I get in trouble one time, I'm going to be in a bunch of trouble the first time I'm in trouble again. So, I mean, I'm 54 years old. I went through that in high school. And I am very, very appalled that I'm having to go through any of this in any public venue. Under false information, I've written tedious, accurate information day after day, year after year, that has just been thoroughly, completely ignored. And I've tried to talk about upgrades. I've tried about talking about, and it hasn't improved. This law library suspension and holding over my head something that never happened in the first place keeps going. It's spilled over into the public transportation. When I was suspended from all the libraries, the buses took on the new project of trashing Debbie's character. Now, this is when I started talking about the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Okay? If we can utilize that document, apply it in this county, we can have an economy. We can establish public venues. I've written letters about establishing a strong foundation where everyone is treated as a cherished human being. If you know Jesus Christ, your Lord and Savior, that's automatic. But if you don't know Christ as your Savior, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights clearly spells out how that we can interact as priceless human beings, establish that bottom line foundation for everyone to be a normal, priceless human being. Your homelessness will drop.
Deborah, time to come to conclusion.
Thank you. The economy will improve, and we can possibly get transportation going the correct way. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to speak under public comment this morning? Mr. Drake? Good morning.
Good morning. Emerson Drake, longtime Modesto resident. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I am going to take a chance here. I guess not really. I'm just going to use my time to thank you. I know you don't hear that very often. Some people's heads spin. He's thanking them, you know. I made a public information request. It was quite long and involved. Supervisor Withrow, I thank you for backing that request. CEO Nino, I thank you, ma'am, for you had the cover letter. You helped shepherd it through. The county council even was involved, Mr. Dorian, so I thank you, sir. So you went above and beyond a simple public information request. You gave the people of not only Salida but of Modesto an understanding of where we're going to go to from here regarding the annexation. And I know this is way off in the future, but it was very important, I think, for everybody to get the information you gave. And no, I'm not going to pitch the website. The point is, you gave the information. We put it out on the show last night, though. It didn't make the cable TV. But the point is, I want to thank you. You went way above where you had to go. It was, if I'd gone to MID with that request, O'Loughlin would have been laughing his tail off and saying, no thanks, Emerson, you know. So I do appreciate it, ma'am, sir, and especially you, Supervisor. Thank you very much. Gentlemen, have a great day.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to address us under public comment? Seeing none, we'll move to consent calendar. Consent calendar consists of all items on the agenda marked with an asterisk. Does any Board of Supervisors have any issue they'd like to pull for a separate vote or separate discussion? Does anybody in the audience wish to discuss any of the consent calendar items, those items again marked with an asterisk on the agenda? Seeing none. Hi there. Which item would you like to speak on today?
What?
Which item would you like to speak about?
My address.
What item would you like to speak on?
I'm Flora Cunha, 5736 Meyer Drive, right behind, back on the other side of the canal of where this proposed zoning is.
Okay. Hold on just a minute. We're going to come to you in just a minute. Okay? It'll be just about 1 minute before we get to you.
1 minute?
Uh-huh. If you can take your seat for just a minute, and we'll get to that public hearing.
Oh, I thought it was at 9:10.
It will be as soon as I open it up. So just give me a couple minutes to get there.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Anybody have any consent calendar public comment? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board.
Okay, ma'am. I'll make a motion. We approve. Okay.
Motion.
Second.
And a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. We have two scheduled matters this morning. I am going to reverse them. I should have given a heads up to the planning, but we are going to reverse that, and we're going to start with the 9:10 public hearing because we have public here to speak on that, and most of the people who are going to speak on the budget are our county staff, so we're going to take the public first. 9:10, continuation of public hearing to consider Planning Commission's recommendation for approval of rezone application number 2011-02, Randy Thomas, a request to rezone is it 42 or 4.2 acres of five different planned development zoning districts into one new planned development zone.
Good morning, Chair O'Brien, members of the board, Ms. Nino, Mr. Dorian, Angela Freitas, your acting planning director, and that is 42 acres. This item was originally presented to the board on August 21st, and based on some comments that were raised by members of the public, we're bringing it back today for consideration and to address those concerns that were raised. With me this morning to present the project is Bill Carlson, the project planner, and I'll turn it over to him now.
Thank you, members of the board. Yeah, as mentioned, we have a rezone application for Randy Thomas, 42 plus or minus acres, it's right now zoned five different planned development zone districts. We want to combine into one planned development zone district for some commercial industrial uses, which is basically from our planned industrial zone district is what we're looking at. It's the low water generating zoning district that we have. It limits retail sales for only products that are manufactured, distributed from, or installed on site. There is a park and sell auto area, and the auction has been moved from a permitted use down to that it would have to go to as a use permit if it's approved as presented. The area just south of St. Francis, north of Modesto, on the west side of McHenry. The zoning is planned development and it's agriculture surrounding it. And there's a site plan that's attached here that's with the existing buildings and the parking as laid out. As mentioned earlier, the project was continued from the August 21st meeting. There was a neighbor that was asking what safeguards were in place to protect the neighboring subdivision, their groundwater and the projects from the project septic system. Then there was comments also for noise, crime, and Myers Road being a private road, concerns regarding the noise and crime. They focused in on the proposed auction and impacts to the neighborhood. There were two auctions that were held on this property, and they did not have approval. The water and septic system, the neighboring residential subdivision is served by individual water wells and septic systems. Department of Environmental Resources reviewed the groundwater concerns. Both the project site and the general area comprises of sandy soil. However, there is significant clay layers that are as well in that area. In 1987, the domestic well logs indicate that the normal wells that are drilled in that area are 110 to 360 feet deep. There are many older wells that are in the area which have much shallower depths. The possibility of these wells being impacted by their own septic systems or the neighbor's septic systems, given that there's small lots, the quarter acre to half acre in the concentration of homes, there's a possibility there. And as you can see, there's a subdivision here. Obviously, this could not happen today with well and septic systems. There are two wells that are on the project site. They were classified by as a public water system and regulated by Department of Environmental Resources. These systems, the system was inactive at the end of 2010 when the operations ceased. The water system owner isn't required to have the domestic water supply permit, but continues to conduct the water quality monitoring. Any new business venture would have to reapply for the water supply permit and meet any current regulatory requirements. One of these wells has an elevated nitrate level. It's unknown whether the nitrate level is due to historical farming practices or whether it's natural occurring. The concentration of homes nearby may have an impact on the nitrate level of the water wells. No new buildings are proposed with this project. But any on-site construction that would trigger any new or expanded septic system, they would have to meet the new Measure X system, which would provide a higher level of treatment. And we have development standards number 32 through 35 that do address the water and septic system issues. Myers Drive, there was an indication there that it was a private road. It was part of a subdivision that was recorded in 1946, but Myers Drive was not accepted by the county back then. And I just want to read something here. We got something from our department, Public Works Department, that says that many roads in the county haven't been accepted by the county or maintained by the county, but there appears to be no reason for the county maintenance of this road since there's no resource or added to add to this roadway or to the system mileage, maintained mileage system. It's one of those things that was done right after World War II. There is legal access onto the parcel, but it's a public road, but it's just not publicly maintained. The other two roads are maintained by the county, and those two are also public roads. We do have a development standard that there's dedication on Evelyn Way, but no additional dedications required on Myers Drive. Project development standard number 20 for the proposed planned development zone authorizes secondary emergency access on Myers and Evelyn for new uses only. The current permit, The rezone that was done back in the 80s and 90s, they do have some rights here with the equipment rental business that did have some access onto Myers. But if MID's license agreement for the bridges that cross over, if they're revoked, then only the equipment rental business could be on that property. There are three bridges that are located on the site. They do have revocable license agreements. There's a concern that MID had that with the number of people that could be accessing these bridges, and they required that to revise the agreements to address these issues. The applicant and MID have been working in together. They've had several meetings to discuss the revision and access agreements, and apparently they're very close to finishing up those revisions. Normally, this project wouldn't move forward with these access issues. However, this project, located on the west side of the canal, does have an alternative access on the Myers and Evelyn Way from the equipment rental business. We do have development standards to address the limitations for any uses located west of the canal if the MID agreement is revoked. Improvements on McHenry, the southernmost driveway, will need to be closed. That was a condition from our Public Works Department and Caltrans. There's full access of the three utmost driveways that are labeled full access would need to be restricted into one centralized full access driveway. There's a development standard on that, and we do have that this would have to be done prior to any business license issued for that site. And we on the site plan, we have the southernmost driveway. That one's got to be closed. And these three driveways up here, they would have to, one of them would be full access, and the other two could be right-ins, right-outs. There was a concern that the Planning Commission and the Board of Supervisors meetings that the surrounding property owners did not get proper notification. We did send notices out within a quarter-mile radius. This did include all the property owners to subdivision to the west, as well as 37 property owners on Chenault Drive. And we do have a picture of how far we did go out. We sent out over 200 notices. We have some of these industrial parks. These have been condoed out. That's why we have a large number of property owners that we did send advertisements out to. For a clarification at the meeting, the auction was proposed to be a permitted use. During the planning review, the auction was changed to have a separate use permit application before any auction activities may operate on site. The application proposed would be an independent analysis of traffic, noise, and other land use issues. Property owners have had two auctions on site without authorization since submitting the rezone application. Do you have a question? Is any auction use compatible with the adjoining residential neighborhood, and how does the county address any non-permitted auctions in the future? We could eliminate the auction use entirely from this project. If that was the case, then they would have to come back for a rezone if an auction use is being requested, or we could add additional development standard to the project that would, should any auction occur in the future. We do have a possible standard that we did put together yesterday that said that if any non-permitted uses are known to occur on site, no new business licenses or business renewals shall be issued for any use until the plan development has been reviewed by the Planning Commission and the Planning Commission finds it appropriate to continue the issuance of business licenses. The Planning Commission may be part of any review for the noncompliance proceedings under Chapter 21.40, which there's a number of things that we could do if that's the case. The Planning Commission did recommend approval back in July on a 7-0 vote, and we do have those actions before you. Nobody did speak at the public at the Planning Commission meeting at that meeting. Staff's available if there's any questions.
Any questions or comments by Board of Supervisors? Seeing none, at this time I'm going to open the public hearing. Ma'am, now's a good time to speak on this item. Good morning.
Okay. I have a letter here from my son who lives next door to me on the left side of me, and we're both facing this bamboo stuff. So I'm going to read his letter, if I can see it. that's to whom it may concern. I, Steve Cunha, live at 5742 Mile Drive, Modesto. I am against this plan to be approved because they can't use a private road for access to the Randy Thomas Business Park. We as landowners own and maintain this road. It is not a county road. Heavy traffic would break down the road. We have and will have to pay for it, not to maintain the liability if anyone was to get hurt on the road. I will do everything in my power to discourage use of this road. This road includes speed bumps. This will include speed bumps. People already go too fast on our road. We have kids riding bikes and walking on the road. Opening up with something like this would danger the neighborhood. Therefore, we should use a county road and not Meyer Drive. When you have the polluting in the water in the area, there are lots of shallow wells in the area. That doesn't count. Strange people it would bring into the area. We have enough crime already. Stephen Cunha, landowner. Then I got, like I said, we live across the canal from this, and these bamboos, all they do is breed rats. We're getting as bad as Yosemite. In the wintertime, when there's no water in the canal, they come across to our house, and I've had the pest control people set traps all over to catch these rats. I even found one in the swimming pool. He went swimming. There's a sign at the end of, and I noticed it this morning again, at the end of Evelyn Way, which I saw you read on there, and it's still there. Yeah, I guess that's about it. We're still a private road, and I'm concerned about these rats over there and those bamboos. A long time ago, when I was arguing with the Thomases about their scissor lifts and whatever way up in the sky that would look down on what I was doing in my backyard, well, they were told to put a barrier, 15-foot barrier, but what we got was bamboos. And I don't like those bamboos. If I had my way, I'd throw a cigarette out there. So anyway, I hope you make the right decision.
Thank you. This is a public hearing. Anybody else wish to address this board on this item? Good morning.
Mark Stone, 330 St. Francis. First of all, I have no problems with what they're doing on the east side of McHenry over there. You're postponing it a couple weeks ago was great for us, but bad for them and the revenue stream they wanted to bring in there. My concerns with the stuff on the west side. And it's still the underground water. They address the septic tanks only. I'm also talking about storm drain water. Only thing I have to go on, there was environmental resources, I understand, determined that there's a clay layer there. Well, my father-in-law, when he bought that one piece of property that runs along the canal, sold the sand off it in the early 60s. That's why that property is benched. The first bench dropped the sand off about 7 to 8 feet, the second about 4 feet. So that's 12 feet there. We dug tree holes down another 6 feet. So that's down around that 18, 20-foot level now, and it's pure sand all the way down. There is no clay layer. My brother-in-law, when he moved the old Zeff house onto Tiemann Road immediately across the train tracks, the full basement we put in was dug to 18 feet down there to be able to pour the concrete and get the compaction necessary because of the sandy soil that's out there that was required by Public Works. We dug to 18 feet, and that was still sugar sand all the way down there. There was no clay layer. We drilled a well at the ranch house on St. Francis at 936 St. Francis, which is kitty corner from the back of the property there. The well company found a clay layer at 60 feet. My well sits at 43, 44 feet is where my pump sits. It's drilled to 50 feet. So that puts any underground water or drain water or anything else, it'll be trapped basically between that clay layer and come back. Historical fact, we know that the settling ponds from Tri-Valley did pollute our underground water plume, and it did transfer over to our water, which, as I mentioned, tinted our water that pink color. After those ponds were shut down, our water went back to the normal color once again. All I have is historical fact to go on. I have no geology drillings or anything else. I just know what we have found by digging in our own ground out there as to what is out there. So my concern is what happens with that piece of land on the north side of the canal. This was agriculture land, it was farmed, and it was taken care of. I really have a problem with the future uses of what would come out of a planned development on this. Getting back to the Myers Drive a little bit, and talking to the neighbor, before the Thomases moved in and brought their equipment business there, that was a graded native soil. A neighbor graded it and oiled it. That is the subbase for that road out there. When the Thomas trucks tore the road up, Mr. Thomas, Bob Thomas, put about an inch and a half asphalt lift on top of it. That is all the more that road is. It's the native soil that was graded, oiled, with an inch and a half asphalt lift on it. So it does not meet county road standards at all. And that's why the neighbors are concerned about what's going to happen. It's already starting to crack and break up. They paid for that original grading and oiling. The two Cunha families and the Espinosas paid for that before the Thomas family moved in and started their business there. So there are still some things that I have some concerns that come back from the reports you have back. As I said, anything on the east side of the canal is great. I have the real concerns about what's going to happen to our drinking water from understanding how the septic systems are, but the dry wells, if you dig a dry well down to 15 or 20 feet, you're injecting that water basically down to my underground water plume where I draw my drinking water from as well as others. The evaporation pond they put for the Pentecost business site on the other side is already deeper than what the Tri-Valley pits were, so that is putting anything that runs into that pit closer to my drinking water supply. So now you move to the other side of the canal, you've brought it even closer to contaminating my water supply. Thank you.
Anybody else wishes to speak? Sir? Good morning.
Good morning. I am walking like I am old. But I live on Myers Drive at 5724 Myers Drive. We moved from Riverbank, my wife and I and the family, two boys. We moved from Riverbank to where we're at, and it was private road when we got, it was recorded on the purchase. But anyway, we have found a lot of peace and unity there to cooperate with everyone. And so I just want to tell you that I am. We are against any change of the way it is now. We still like it private, but after I'm gone. We're gone. You can do whatever you like to do with it. But I just want to let you know that we've a lot of, we're still kicking, my wife and I, we're still kicking around. We're in the 84s and whatnot, but it brought us a lot of peace, a lot of good health. And we do have sandy soil. We have a well. But I just want to let you know my vote on it.
Very good. Thank you.
I hope I have backing.
Did you get his name for the record?
My name is Peter Espinoza. I have my wife and my two boys that will live there. My wife's still here.
Very good. Thank you. Does anybody else wish to speak in this public hearing? Good morning.
Good morning, supervisors. My name is Rod Hawkins with Hawkins and Associates Engineering. I represent the Thomases on this PD application. Just want to reiterate that, you know, this is just a consolidation of an existing or of five existing PDs. If they found a user for an equipment rental business, they could move in tomorrow. So we're just trying to utilize the existing facilities at this time. There is no planned building. Obviously, anything that does come in will comply with the Environmental Health Department regulations of Stanislaus County and the state, for that matter, with regard to storm drainage and septic systems. Our primary access, again, for the members of the audience that weren't here last time, our primary access will be McHenry Avenue. I've been talking with MID. It's not a really a delay. Part of the problem with the bridges is there's three different agreements. They just want to make them all the same. There's no issue with the access over the canal with MID and ourselves. So we will have those in place very shortly. At this time, I'm happy with all the conditions, even the proposed condition regarding the unpermitted use. I apologize on behalf of my client for that indiscretion. But at this time, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have of me or my client.
Any questions of the applicant?
And I just wonder, Mr. Chairman, where that road is that the other people were referring to, where it is on the map.
You can see it right there, Meyer Drive.
It's right. It's right here. Oh. And this would only have a secondary emergency access only to go on to it. And the only way would be is if the license agreements were revoked to cross MID, an equipment rental business could go here and access Myers Drive. Anything else would not be allowed on this side of the canal.
Yeah, I guess it's right here.
Yeah.
That's it. That's
there's the three crossings if they were revoked.
Any other questions?
Myers is a county. Right?
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Last call for anybody wishing to speak in this public hearing. Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing, bring it back to the Board of Supervisors. Questions, comments? Supervisor Monteith.
First of all, I appreciate the department addressing some of the questions that were brought up last week. And I also understand that if this approved, it is merely telling it's a zoning, it's really not allowing the auction yard to go in without a business permit. And before actually it can be zoned, the Caltrans has to have some mitigation corrected?
There is a development standard with this project right now that would require an extension of the left turn lane.
Yeah.
When the auction yard goes in, that would be triggered when the auction, but the auction yard has to go through a separate use permit process.
Correct.
So there still could be additional conditions added.
Oh, actually, right. But for this to be zoned in this manner, there has to be approval by the MID and Caltrans, correct? If a business then wants to apply, then there's a business, he has to get permission or a business permit. This is on the zoning that a auction yard of this type could go into business at this location, but it is not giving the permit for the business per se.
Correct.
To go in.
Correct. The auction.
And under those conditions, there are a separate set of rules by which you get into the noise and to get into
Correct.
The other process.
Correct.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify that. At this point, I had questions last week. From my perspective, I believe that you've answered most of those. I think this is an issue which no one will be completely satisfied on, regardless of the study that's being made. I appreciate your follow-up. The Planning Commission has given their approval. I think this could be and should be put into place. And you also mentioned some additional amendments or new standards.
Correct. We've proposed a new development standard that could be added by this board that, if a non-permitted use were to occur on site, would allow us to restrict new licenses or renewals of business licenses and to bring the project back before the Planning Commission for review.
So in essence, what we're really doing is putting some teeth in some of our rules and regulations in order to enforce the rules and regulations we have in place.
Correct. We're trying to enhance that process.
Well, I'm in agreement, and I think we've come a long way, and I commend the department in coming up with the new standards to address a problem we're confronted with. And I'm in agreement of approving this application.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay. Is there a motion?
So move.
I have a motion.
Second.
And a second. And that is with the amendment? That is with the added...
With the new standard, correct.
All right. There's a motion and a second. Motion by Monti, second by Chiesa. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 5-0.
Thank you.
Now we'll go to the 905 public hearing. Public hearing to consider adoption of the recommended final budget for fiscal year 2012-13 and related actions.
While we're getting ready, for everybody's information, we've been watching the Home Shopping Network here on our little screen for the first part of the meeting.
We're hoping the budget will show up. There you are, Mr. Withrow.
Yes, there it is. All right. Perfect timing. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairman, members of the board, Mr. Doring. I'm Monica Nino, the county's chief executive officer. We have Stan Risen, Cindy Tomlinson, and Christy Allman at the staff table. The last 4 years have presented unprecedented fiscal challenges and economic conditions. The organization continues to move forward through this adversity with a determination and drive that is unparalleled to ensure that the core services continue to be provided at our community in a creative ways that are strategic and measured. The reduction of operating costs to sustainable levels has been key to our budget balancing strategy. The recommended final budget before you here today reflects a total county budget of over $984 million and recommends the continued use of one-time funds totaling $31.6 million to balance the general fund. County employees, I can't say enough about them, continue to do what is necessary to ensure the organization remains sound and critical, that critical services are aligned with resources. Collectively, all labor organizations have agreed to the continuation of the 5% salary deduction, which had occurred the prior two fiscal years. In addition to that, the implementation of an additional 1% deduction. This is a significant accomplishment and speaks volumes to their commitment to the organization and the value placed in being fiscally responsible and maintaining the public's trust in the use of very scarce resources. As we continue to see signs of moderate improvement to the economy and the results of our strategic planning, it will be imperative that we begin rebuilding fund balance, because that has essentially assisted us greatly in this organization for the last 4 years to meet our community service needs and also meet our budget balancing needs. It takes a lot of staff time and effort to get to this point of the presentation at this final budget hearing. I want to thank this board for your leadership and willingness to consider staff recommendations and ideas. Department heads, for your expertise and creativity in delivering the services that you do every single day. And to the Chief Executive Office, for your work ethic and support, I thank you. Mr. Risen will take it from here.
Okay. Well, good morning, Chairman O'Brien, board members, Ms. Nito, Mr. Doering. I don't know how well we can compete with the Home Shopping Network, but we'll do our best to keep you from falling asleep here. I want to start off just taking a moment to thank our budget team. They're just a wonderful team to work with. They're a very resilient group, hardworking, and it's just a privilege to work with such a tremendous group, and I wanted to acknowledge them right at the start. The final budget addendum that's being presented for your consideration this morning reflects some changes that we are bringing since the adopted proposed budget you approved back in June. When you combine the recommended changes in the addendum with the adopted proposed budget, they represent Stanislaus County's final spending plan for our 2012-2013 fiscal year, and it is the budget that we would transmit to the state controller as our official final budget for the year. The presentation this morning will provide you an update of the county's financial position, review the recommendations, briefly discuss some of the challenges facing the county. After that, you'll have an opportunity to ask any questions you may have, and then we'd request that you open up the public hearing for comment. As has been the case for a number of years, our final budget and presentation this morning is organized around your seven board priorities. By way of a little background, this is our fourth year, as Ms. Nino mentioned, of a multi-year budget strategy for our general fund. A good portion of our presentation this morning will be discussing the general fund, because that is the fund where you as a board have the most discretion and which funds a lot of our critical core services as a county. As we began the year, we were facing an initial general fund deficit of approximately $20.1 million. $14.6 million of that gap was closed with one-time funding through the use of $9.2 million in TEDR reserves and $5.4 million of unassigned fund balance. That left a remaining gap of $5.5 million, and that gap was closed. $1.7 million of it was closed when we were able to conclude our labor negotiations with our outstanding labor groups, and departments absorbed the remaining $3.8 million in their budgets. For the fifth straight year, we've experienced a decline in our property tax revenues, which is our single largest discretionary revenue source, representing over 60% of our discretionary revenue. This year, the assessor announced a decline of 1.45% in the assessment roll, leaving us a cumulative decline over the 5 years of greater than 23%. We have experienced a modest improvement in our sales tax numbers, but this budget still relies very heavily on one-time funding with little year-over-year growth. What growth we have seen has been primarily related to the AB 109 Public Safety Realignment Program. As I mentioned a little bit ago, the final budget that is being brought before you included the $9.2 million use of TEDR reserves. We are also recommending an increase in the use of unassigned fund balance of $3.1 million, which will bring the total use for this final budget to $8.5 million of unassigned fund balance. And then we also include $13.9 million in carryover savings that departments were able to create either by bringing in additional revenue or cutting expenses. They're allowed to keep 75% of that. In years past, we always just carried over those savings as part of our year-end closing adjustments. This year, in an attempt to be a little more transparent about what is occurring and to let you know what departments we're doing, we are bringing these carryover savings to you at the final budget, requesting fresh appropriations and giving us an opportunity to tell the story what they're for. As Ms. Nino mentioned, we are still using almost $31.6 million of one-time dollars in balancing this budget. I'm going to speak to that more in a minute. So we continue to have a gap between our annual operating costs and our annual revenue. Even though we're using $31.6 million of one-time funding, in all fairness, I should point out that about $18 million of our budget is one-time expenses as well. But that still leaves a gap of about $13.6 million of just operating revenue versus operating expenses. And that's something we're going to have to continue to focus on, because that's just not sustainable to keep using one-time savings to balance our budget. While we're thankful that we built a significant number of reserves to help us weather this great recession we've gone through, it'll be critical and one of our top priorities as we move forward to rebuild some of these reserves so that we can weather future storms. So the budget being recommended to you in total this morning is $984,161,674. It's, as you can see from the slide, approximately 46% of the budget goes to our health and human service programs. Public safety represents about 19% of our total budget. And this final budget is up 10.4% over the final budget you approved a year ago. And I'm going to break that 10.4% down for you in just a few minutes. As you can see from this slide, the changes being recommended to you today in total recommend just over $30 million from the proposed budget you approved in June. That $30 million is composed primarily of three areas. The first area is the $13.9 million of net county cost savings that departments created that I spoke to you just a minute ago. We allow them to keep 75% of any savings they've occurred in the current year, and then 100% of any savings they have from prior years. Another $11.7 million of our recommendations is related to public safety realignment, which is in our community corrections partnership budget. And then the third large ticket item that's in this budget is we're recommending that you set aside the additional funding needed to re-roof and put a new HVAC system out at our probation Blue Gum facilities. That project's a little over $4 million. This additional $2.6 million would bring up enough funding to fund that project. So those three areas alone represent over $28 million of the $30 million in recommendations being brought to you today. This slide shows a year-over-year comparison. As you can see, after three straight years of decline, this year's budget is up. And I'm going to go ahead and break those numbers down for you here. Here you can see a gap, the difference between last year and this year, the $984 million, which is a $93 million increase. If we go to break that down, the 10.4%, you can see that a little under $2.7 million of that is related to the new HVAC and re-roof out at probation. $13.9 million related to our net county cost carryover savings program, $48.5, and this is the big, between $48.5 and $49 million, is related to two road projects that are kind of skewing our whole story this year when we talk about our budget, and that's for the Claribel widening and the new Kiernan interchange project. $13.3 million is related to our community corrections partnership budget, and that's leaving about $14.1 million of year-over-year change in other operational growth areas, a good portion of which is related to our health and human services programs. As this final transition indicates, over 7.3 of the 10.3% in growth is in one-time funding, leaving just over 3% in year-over-year operational growth. This slide shows our growth in the general fund since the proposed budget that you adopted back in June of $21.6 million. Again, this is related primarily to the three things I discussed with you earlier, the net county cost savings program, $4.5 million for a transfer in of public safety realignment revenue to the sheriff and probation departments, and then $2.6 million for the probation re-roof and HVAC. This slide, I think, provides a nice summary of all the changes that are occurring as it relates to the general fund. We ended the year in a very positive note with $25.6 million of unassigned fund balance. The first thing you'll see on this sheet is an accounting adjustment that we wanted to disclose. Our long-term receivable for our teeter plan went down, and so we set that money aside in a separate designation called teeter plan, because that's a door that swings both ways. Sometimes that receivable goes back up, and then we have to have funding to fund that receivable as it becomes greater. Next, you'll see we set aside $6.8 million in a retirement assignment to assist the county in addressing some of the impacts we are anticipating if our retirement board, Stan Serra, lowers the discount earnings rate. We had shared this with departments, but late last week we also sent out a note warning them that if the governor's November sales tax initiative, Prop 30, fails to pass, that these funds may be needed for other higher priority items. And we also balanced the proposed budget with $5.4 million, which I discussed with you earlier. And so after pulling out those items, that left us $13.4 million. The recommendations contained in the report to you today, which we will go through in a few minutes, contain the use of an additional $3.1 million in general fund dollars, leaving $10.3 million of unassigned fund balance. And then it's kind of low on the screen. I don't know if the public can see it, but there's three other adjustments I would like to speak to just briefly. First of all, you as a board had dedicated any tobacco securitization funds be dedicated solely to the capital projects and creating a revolving fund so that as you loan money out and it got repaid, it would go back into that fund. So money was loaned to fund the new animal services facility out on Hackett. And as they begin repayment, we learned from an accounting perspective that we're required to bring that back in as discretionary revenue in the general fund. In order to meet your board's intent that money be set aside as a revolving fund, we are asking that you commit it into a special commitment in the general fund so that it can only go for capital projects and the original intent that you had of those tobacco securitization funds. So not only are we asking you to commit the $547,000 today, we're asking for authority to automatically do that adjustment in the future. Secondly, we are facing some anticipated litigation that could represent a significant exposure to the county, and so we're asking you to set aside $3.7 million to address that pending litigation should it go negative. We get an unfavorable outcome on that. And then finally, we're asking you to increase the assigned contingency reserve by $6 million, and I'm going to speak to that here in a moment. While we're recommending no change in our discretionary revenue budget estimates at this time, there are areas such as property taxes that have gone down. Other areas are showing signs of improvement, such as sales tax, and we think it's best just to wait till mid-year until we are able to look at 6 years' worth of actual results before we come in and recommend any changes to our discretionary revenue. We're also recommending, as part of this report, a new fund balance policy for our contingency reserve, which is in the general fund. The budget team reviewed publications benchmarking reserve policies, as well as reviewed some of the policies of other California counties that won the Government Financing Officers Association Distinguished Budget Presentation Award. And after reviewing those publications and best practices, the budget team put together the following recommendation for a new fund balance policy. First, the purpose of the contingency reserve is to build up adequate reserve to help mitigate economic downturns, unforeseen circumstances, state or federal budget cuts, disaster costs, and other emergencies. Currently, this reserve has a balance of $2.4 million. The recommended policy would set a target of 8% of the average annual discretionary revenue over the last three fiscal years and would require a four-fifths vote of your board to touch it. It would also require that if the reserve falls below 8%, that you adopt a plan as a Board of Supervisors to restore it within 24 months, unless doing so would create a severe hardship, in which case you would have some latitude to develop an alternative plan. The recommended budget before you today sets aside a little over $6 million to bring this reserve to a total of $8.4 million. To reach our 8% target, we would need an additional $3.2 million over the next 2 years, which we would recommend be one of our first priorities for any future year-end savings as we close the books each year. Some questions have come up as to, boy, it seems like we have a lot of contingencies, and what exactly are those? This slide shows you that we have two types of contingencies. We have operating contingencies that we budget for, we plan for, and we also have our savings account, or our reserves. We have a contingency account there. The first budgeted one is a budget that we've had every year for ever since I've been involved in budget, called Appropriations for Contingencies. It normally has anywhere from a $2 to $6 million budgeted amount in it. This year, we've budgeted $4.4 million. And it's to address any unforeseen operational issues that occur during the fiscal year. We also have, in the general fund mandated match budget, a contingency account with a balance of just under $7.5 million. This account is different in the fact that it's not unforeseen issues, but foreseen issues, and is set aside primarily to deal with anticipated operational issues related to our Community Services Agency IHSS program and public economic assistance for our foster care program and our Health Services Agency for our indigent health care program. And in fact, in the recommended budget to you today is the use of some of this contingency reserve, $142,000 for the IHSS fraud program integrity. And then finally, we have a contingency reserve, which was the subject of our fund balance policy I just mentioned to you. Its purpose is more of our savings account to deal with future unforeseen emergencies, disaster costs, and budget challenges such as we have gone through the last several years. And that would have a balance of $8.4 million if you approve the recommendations today. All of these contingencies require a four-fifths vote of your board to use. One of the reasons we've been able to get through this difficult fiscal climate over the last few years as well as we have is because departments went to great efforts to rein in costs. Aiding this was a program, incentive program, we called the Net County Cost Savings Program, which I spoke to earlier. Allowed departments to carry over 75% of their savings. As I mentioned, unlike previous years where we just carried it over this year, they're included in our final budget recommendations. Many, if not most all, of the departments are using their savings this year to address an anticipated increase in our retirement charges this year. Well, not only anticipated, it's actually a realized increase in our retirement charges as Stan Sarah no longer has non-vested benefit reserves to use to help drive down rates. And so across the board, our retirement costs went up about 25% because that subsidy went away. And so most departments are using their net county cost savings to help to address those retirement cost increases. Our recommendation before you this morning is that the net county cost savings program continue as it has in the past. This was a change we made just late last week. We had earlier shared with departments a different strategy, and upon further reflection, we felt it best just to stick with our current program as we've had in the past. At this point, I'm going to turn the presentation over to Cindy, and she's going to take you through our department recommendations.
Good morning. In a safe community, recommendations for $20.7 million in additional appropriations include the net county cost savings as indicated here. Increases are recommended for the Community Corrections Partnership Plan of $7.1 million in Phase 2 funding for use as approved by your board on July 24, 2012, as well as $1.1 million in probation from the Community Corrections Partnership Phase 2 funding and $15,000 in state funding for new field radios. For the Sheriff's Department, an increase of $3.6 million in Phase 2 funding is recommended, along with $276,000 for increased jail commissary costs resulting from the increased population due to Phase 2 implementation. Also recommended for the Sheriff is an increase in staffing of 5 Deputy Sheriff and 1 Sergeant positions to form a second Sheriff's Team Investigating Narcotics and Gangs, or STING Squad. Staff will return at mid-year with recommendations for increased appropriations as needed. For the departments in a healthy community, a total increase of appropriations of $865,000 is recommended, including the net county cost savings as indicated here. For behavioral health and recovery services, recommendations include an increase of $1.4 million for Community Corrections Partnership funding, an increase of $1 million for inpatient costs associated with the new Doctors Medical Center Provider Agreement, and out-of-county placement costs. Also recommended is the use of $350,000 in one-time funds for roof and HVAC replacement, strategic planning costs, and this includes county match funding for the purchase of new vehicles for the Public Guardian. In the Child Support Services Department, a recommended decrease of $495,000 is recommended as a result of funding cuts implemented in the state budget. Recommendations for the Community Services Agency include a decrease in appropriations of $1.4 million, resulting from state budget reductions to StanWorks, and the use of $609,000 of departmental fund balance, resulting from the 1991 realignment growth for child welfare program critical needs. Also recommended for the Community Services Agency is funding of $142,000 for the IHSS Fraud Investigations and Program Integrity, funded through a transfer from the mandated match contingency account, as Stan mentioned briefly. For the Health Services Agency, an increase of about $500,000 is recommended for pandemic influenza and teen pregnancy programs funded by state and federal revenue. For a strong local economy, it is recommended to increase library appropriations by $66,000 for the Stanislaus Literacy Center program and increase janitorial charges. In a strong agricultural economy and heritage, recommendations for an overall increase of $961,000 include the net county cost savings as indicated here. In the Agricultural Commissioner's Office, a decrease of $73,000 is recommended as a result of reduced state contract allocations, along with a transfer of funds to fix assets for sound and visual system improvements at Harvest Hall. For a well-planned infrastructure system, a total increase of appropriations of $903,000 is recommended and includes the net county cost savings as indicated here. In the Public Works Department, an increase of $25,000 is recommended to replace a 40-year-old modular building funded by departmental fund balance. Additionally, the department is requesting a change to lobby hours of the Transit Division located on the fourth floor of the City-County Building to coincide with the City of Modesto Transit lobby hours. The lobby hours would change from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. to 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. For the departments included in the Efficient Delivery of Public Services priority, an overall increase in appropriations of $6.5 million is recommended and includes net county cost savings as indicated here. These are additional net county cost savings. I want to point out for the clerk recorder, of their $309,000 in net county cost savings, they plan to use $110,000 to fund projects such as redesign of counters and cubicle layout, installation of video surveillance systems, and replacement of outdated computers. And again, these are additional net county cost savings. A decrease in appropriations of $27,500 is recommended for the assessor's office as a result of decreases in penalty revenue. For the chief executive office county operations, it is recommended to increase appropriations by $229,000 for city-county airport capital improvements and by $65,000 in county match obligations for the Local Area Formation Commission, or LAFCO, for the Public Guardian vehicle purchases, and to fund the IHSS fraud investigations and program integrity. Also for the Chief Executive Office County Facilities, increases are recommended for the Finch Road Animal Services Facility closeout of $106,000, $60,000 increase for cost allocation plan charges and utilities for the Medical Arts Building during construction, and the $2.6 million for roof and HVAC repairs at Juvenile Hall. I'm going to move into a summary of the staffing changes. An overall increase of 23 positions is recommended in the final budget. This includes 12 new positions at the Sheriff's Department. Also recommended is the restoration of 15 unfunded positions for the Auditor Controller, the General Services Agency, the Chief Executive Office, Department of Environmental Resources, Health Services Agency, Library and Probation Departments. And finally, the Sheriff's Department is requested to unfund four positions. This results in a total countywide increase in allocated positions of 23. On the labor side, the county has agreements in place with all labor groups for a 6% salary deduction that does not expire. The negotiated agreements include a change in how some groups calculate overtime that no longer counts sick, bereavement, and comp time as time worked when computing overtime. All negotiated labor agreements are scheduled to expire on June 30th, 2014. The new health benefit agreement has provided savings equivalent to a 2% reduction in employee wages achieved through the county's move to a self-funded insurance model, expansion of health plan alternatives, and a reduction in the county's benefit contribution. Savings in the first year of the agreement are estimated at $4.9 million. With 36% of the county's budget and 53% of the general fund budget designated for salary and benefit costs, the agreements with labor have significantly reduced the county's financial pressure. We are fortunate to have labor organizations willing to work in partnership with the county. This cooperation has been critical in the county's ability to navigate through unprecedented fiscal challenges. The county has also taken other measures previously to reduce salary and benefit costs. These include the 5% salary deduction agreements for all county employees during fiscal years 2010-11 and 2011-12. Includes reductions in retirement benefits for all employees hired after January 1, 2011, and modifications to compensation and benefit plans for unrepresented management and confidential employees. The total savings from the 6% salary deduction in the 12-13 fiscal year is estimated to be $16.2 million.
I'd like to take just a few minutes now to talk briefly about some of the challenges facing the county. The first, as I alluded to earlier, is the governor's tax initiative, Prop 30, that's on the November ballot. We remain concerned that the impacts might be to local government if this measure does not pass. While the trigger cuts currently identified by the governor are mostly aimed at educational programs, we are bracing nonetheless. I attend Stan Serra Retirement Board meetings on a regular basis. And having sat through a number of those meetings, I'm anticipating that the Retirement Board will look at dropping the discount rate in preparing their upcoming actuarial analysis. The discount rate, also sometimes referred to as an earning rate, is used in determining both the present value of future benefits as well as the annual investment earnings needed to fund the plan. As you can see on this slide, we're estimating that a 25 basis point drop would cost the county approximately $4.5 million with the hit to the general fund representing a little over half of this amount. The state budget that was approved this year included a repayment of the $7.8 million that the state borrowed back from us back in 2009, but we have not included that payback as part of our discretionary revenue estimates in anticipation that it will either not be paid back in time or that it will be immediately reborrowed as is allowed under Proposition 1A. Although already reflected in Public Works' adopted proposed budget, we just wanted to remind everyone that the state took our highway users' tax dollars, resulting in an annual loss of close to $500,000 that could have gone into our road system.
The Office of the Public Guardian is a mandated county function performed currently by Behavioral Health and Recovery Services for many years. The department has supported funding shortfalls in this budget through the use of departmental fund balance, and in the current year anticipates using over $550,000 of fund balance, approximately 43% of the total budget for Public Guardian. This is not a sustainable funding source and is a potential general fund exposure in the future. As part of the state budget, a number of changes were adopted that impact the in-home supportive services program, including the eventual move to a statewide public authority, state collective bargaining for IHSS provider wages and benefits, and the creation of a county maintenance of effort, or MOE, which replaces the county share of cost beginning July 1, 2012. The MOE is based on the county's actual IHSS wage and benefit expenditures in fiscal year 11-12, plus the administrative cost allocations for IHSS and the public authority, which have not been fully funded in the past. An annual inflation rate of 3.5% will be applied after July 1, 2014. In years when the 1991 realignment revenues decline, the inflation rate would be zero. The MOE cost represents a potential general fund exposure moving forward. A very recent federal decision to accept the state planned amendment for the community first choice option may reduce this exposure. Staff is analyzing that decision and will return to the board with recommendations as necessary at the mid-year. As reported in the adopted proposed budget, significant exposures remain unfunded in the Community Services Agency's Public Economic Assistance budget and the Health Services Agency's Medically Indigent Adult program. The mandated match contingency account does include funding for these exposure. The departments are closely monitoring the program activity and will return to the board with recommendations for funding as part of a future budget review. On the capital project side, the Honor Farm replacement project is underway and is completely funded from insurance proceeds. Existing staff will be moved to the new facility that should be occupied in the fall of 2013. As we speak right now, county staff is at the Capitol, where the State Public Works Board is considering Stanislaus County to be the first funded AB 900 Phase 2 project. And I know I am not doing a good Patty imitation, but she's very excited about this. With the state's approval to proceed, an aggressive design-build schedule will be implemented, and the facilities could be completed by the fall of 2016. Staffing and the transition to the new facilities will be phased based on the county's economic recovery. If fully staffed, the total ongoing general fund obligation is estimated to be $7.7 million annually. On the juvenile side, construction of the new juvenile commitment facility project funded by SB 81 is well underway and will be completed in the spring of 2013. Existing staff will be transferred to the new facility as youth are relocated. Operational design efficiencies will reduce staffing ratios with a zero net change to general fund personnel cost in the initial years to open and occupy the facility. However, as future arrest numbers and population increase, personnel costs are expected to increase as well.
The recommendations before you this morning also include a request to close a majority of the county offices between Christmas Eve and New Year. This has traditionally been a slow period in many of our county operations, and this would allow employees to use some of their furlough days. Employees, after the use of the furlough days for those closures, would have 12 hours remaining, which would be at the as requested with department head approval. In addition, there's two requests, one from the clerk recorder to close April 1st, 2013 to coincide with the state court closure, and cooperative extension to add March 29, 2013 as a furlough day to coincide with the University of California closure. 24-hour facilities and departments or divisions that are required to maintain core service levels would remain open during this period, and those employees would be allowed to take their 48 hours based upon the needs of their department and department head approval. As usual, our county budget is available at www.stancounty.com. And we're just about done here. I'll briefly run through our recommendations. We're asking that you accept the recommended final budget, conduct the public hearing, direct and approve any changes that you would like to make as a board, and then adopt the recommended final budget. That you would authorize the Chief Executive Officer and Auditor Controller to make necessary technical adjustments to implement the budget, that you would direct the Chief Executive Officer and Office Auditor Controller to prepare the adopted final budget and transmit it to the State Controller as in accordance with state law, that by a four-fifths vote you approve the increase in appropriations of $142,000 through the use of contingency funds for the IHSS fraud program, that you authorize the use of $300,000 of the designated capital acquisition account within the BHRS budget. That requires a four-fifths vote of the board as well. That you adopt the revised general fund balance policy that I shared with you. That you authorize an increase to the assigned contingency by $6,033,540 by a four-fifths vote of your board. That you authorize the debt repayment from the Animal Services Agency to go into a special commitment and give us the authority to automatically do that adjustment in the future, that you authorize the Auditor Controller to increase the general fund committed other reserve account for the pending litigation, that you approve the modification in the Transit Division's public hours, that you approve the countywide office closure schedule and the additional closure days for cooperative extension and the clerk recorder, and you amend the salary and position allocation as recommended in the report, as well as the contracts and agreements. And we'll just end with this quote: individual commitment to a group effort, that is what makes a team work, a company work, a society work, and a civilization work. By the great football coach Vince Lombardi. That concludes our presentation. We'd be happy to entertain any questions you may have.
Any questions from Board of Supervisors? I'm gonna start. I do have a question regarding the HVAC system at the Stanislaus Recovery Center. And it's a question of why we need to do it right now. That center currently holds a Valley Recovery program out there that is on a month-to-month lease because we're looking at that facility for a PUF. They have 2 to 3 months left before they move out. Why would we not do the HVAC as part of the plan that we're going to do? We're going to reuse that facility. So why wouldn't we do the HVAC at the same time we do the facility?
Okay, we're going to ask Tim Fedorchek with our Capital Projects Division if he'll respond to that question.
Good morning. Tim Fedorchek with the Capital Projects Division, as Dan said. The project is conceptual. We are working on identifying the exact requirements for that. We will come back separately to the Board of Supervisors with a specific project recommendation for that. We're just not quite ready to make that recommendation yet. So we'll work out the details of the project and bring that back to the board as a specific project recommendation.
Okay.
If I might add, Chairman, what we're asking for today is just to move the funds out of the designated capital acquisition account. We would come to the board with the project for the HVAC at the time that we were ready to move forward.
Why not move the funds then?
I believe that there's a feeling that it's the best business decision to get that process going now. Again, we wouldn't be doing the project at this time until we brought it back to the board.
But has this board decided we're going to do a PUF?
This is not for the PUF. This is the project for the HVAC and the roof, which need to happen whether the building is used as a PUF or other needs.
Tim, isn't the issue that the HVAC needs to be replaced, and we would use it whether it's a PUF, whether it's a recovery center? It would remain intact now and into the future. We wouldn't get rid of it as a result of any remodel, is my understanding.
That's correct. Okay. Exactly how it's done is kind of contingent on that use, which has not been totally developed. So that's why we'd need to bring that back. We know that there's maintenance required as it's coming up on the age where it needs that replacement. So we know that there's going to be a project out there. Exactly how that's developed and delivered, we'll have to come back to you with as soon as we have a recommendation for the specifics of how that project is completed. But the building itself will need that new roof replacement, HVAC replacement. The mechanics of how it's done is what's that question here?
I guess my point is we don't know if we're going to use it or when we're going to use the building. So why replace the HVAC if we have no definite plans on when we're going to reuse the building?
For the preservation of the building itself, the property asset, we'll need to do that. If we don't do that, the failure to do that puts at risk the condition of the building, and we don't want to lose the asset as part of the building's inventory. So if it were nothing more than a very basic improvement to that facility, we would we'd want to do that basic improvement. But if the board does opt to move forward with a specific use of it, how that's designed and developed and what the ultimate exact cost of that development would be could be a little bit different. So we're just not ready yet to make that specific recommendation.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Supervisor Withrow.
This is something that we've talked about. I think I talked to Keith about it, Monica, we all talked about it. But I just want to make it public so that that it's on record in case all of us are gone. God forbid that happens, that this is in there. In the original budget that we did, you know, our original unrecommended proposed budget. It was back on page 369. We talked about parks and recreation, and we talked about Salida. A park was purchased back there back in, geez, it was 2002, I think, and for $600,000+. There was $1 million set aside, so there was extra money that was still sitting there to help develop that park, I think. And as part of the proposed budget, it was said we were going to close out that account. And maybe, Stan, just help me explain this a little bit. We're going to close out that account. It was going to come out of a special fund that it was in it and was going to the general fund. But it was my understanding, and as it's spelled out here, that money was going to go into the general fund, and then it was going to be designated for Salida at some point in the future. That, yes. that it wouldn't just get absorbed and disappear. And so then, so that was the plan. And then I can see that in our final budget, it didn't get designated. And I think that was just an oversight. So I just, and I think in the conversations we've all had, we're going to make sure that that does get designated so it doesn't, it still is there for Salida at some point. And when that day will be, I don't know. But if we're long gone, it will still be there, and somebody else will pick up that torch and make sure. So did I explain that correctly?
You're correct, Supervisor. Our adopted proposed budget said that we would set that aside as a special dedication. Essentially, we had a 10-year agreement with the school district out there with the thought of maybe doing a joint facility. The school 10 years has come and gone. They've really not expressed an interest, so we had conversations with them and decided that we would take this money out of that particular agreement. Our adopted proposed did say we would set it aside, and it was just an oversight on my part that at the year end that fell into unassigned fund balance. So, yes, we will make that commitment to find the money either at mid-year or as part of the next year-end close so that we can designate it so that it stays dedicated for that particular purpose.
Okay. That's great. Thank you.
Other questions? See none. This is a public hearing. I'm going to open the public hearing at this time and ask if anybody wishes to make comment on this. They may do so at this time. Seeing no one, bring it back to the board. I'll close the public hearing. Bring it back to the Board of Supervisors. Comments or questions?
A comment. Just like to say, I know we're finally at a semi-stable budget after 4 years of complete evisceration of county services. We've come back to a spot, and none of this would be possible without our department heads and our employees. Make no mistake about it. We think we do good work up here, but the job the employees have done and the department heads to realize that cutting back where we need to cut back and cutting back in places where it might not be popular is the right thing to do, and you've done a wonderful job. I know there's a lot of money in contingencies. I like to see money in contingencies because there's so much uncertainty still out there, and we go through it every time. It's like Groundhog's Day here. We're talking about the same thing and not knowing what the state's going to do with the November election. So I'm glad we did that. We still have a structural deficit. We're not out of this. That's why I say semi-stable. But I have to congratulate the CEO, Stan, and your budget team. You guys are doing wonderful work. I know you spend 90% of your time on that now because there's so many moving parts that didn't seem to be apparent before. So. Thank you again. Thank you to the employees, and we will get through this. I think we're scraping along bottom right now, and hopefully we're going to see a slight uptick next year. So,
Supervisor DeMartini.
Yes, I also would like to compliment staff on this budget. It's a major effort to put together something like this. There's a lot of dedicated people, especially in the CEO's office, that puts this thing together, plus all our department heads. With declining property taxes and the high unemployment rate, I think that we've done about as well as we could. The realignment is always a concern where the state of California is dumping its prisoners off on local government. In-home supportive services is certainly a concern as we just pick up the tab for this and have little to say about it. The uncertainty over the retirement costs is also another concern that we're going to have to deal with. One thing that really bothers me, and the very little was said about it today, is the payback for Prop 1A. We have the state of California takes $7.8 million from the county, supposedly borrows it and is going to have to repay it. But instead of repaying it, they probably will just repay it and borrow it back the same day, which is just nothing more than just ripping off local government of almost $8 million. So, but that just, it, and on top of the realignment in in-home supportive services, this is really adding a lot of uncertainty to our budget. I would like to compliment the CEO for restoring funding to the airport. We have a lot of compliments here, but that one in particular is that it goes to improving infrastructure for our airport, which I think is a vital need in this community. And as I always do every year, I would like to point out that only half of 1% of the budget goes to the Agriculture Department. I point this the eighth year I've pointed this out, and it supports a $3 billion industry. Where if you look at the social services, which take 46% of the entire budget, of $454 million with virtually nothing to show for it each year, except fostering dependence upon government, and which has become generational. So I'm going to support this budget. I think it's the best we can do, considering our limited discretion that we have. I think this is a good product. It's the best that can be done.
Supervisor Monteith?
I would like to commend the staff and all the county employees. It's difficult to give up what you have, and yet you've stepped forward and realized that today's economy is what we have, instead of trying to hold on to the past with Band-Aids, of holding on to benefits and salaries which we no longer can afford. And I really appreciate your efforts and understanding, and we're going back and facing the fact that today's economy is the standard. And from there, we hope to build instead of trying to Band-Aid and hold on to the economy of the past. So I just want to commend everyone in the county, the employees, and everyone in accepting that, understanding that, and that we will all work in trying to improve the economy over what it is today. So thank you.
Supervisor Withrow.
First, again, Monica, great job. Thank what you're doing, and Stan and everybody. We appreciate all the efforts that everybody's staff is doing. I want to talk a little bit about the contingencies. Like Vito said a little bit, we want to make sure we don't go crazy with these contingencies, but it's definitely needed. It's money that we need to put aside. And if we look at the 8% that we're going to establish here and try to we need to replenish our reserves. We've talked about before in the last at least 2 years that I've gone through the budgets here that as we continue to use the reserves, and so we've got to replenish it. That's what's got us to be able to survive through these times is by having these reserves. So we need to make sure we replenish them. Hopefully we're at the bottom, and we're going to work our way back up from here. But I think it's great. The 8% contingency reserve is a good plan, and it's it sounds like it's an industry standard from what's going on out there. And so I know in the private sector we constantly have our clients make sure you have a certain amount of reserve to get you through so many months of a catastrophe. And so, I mean, that's just exactly what we're doing here. So we've been going through the reserves. We're going to replenish it, and I think that's a great thing. The last thing I just want to say is just kind of like what everybody has said here with regard to the staff here at the county. You know, we had a meeting at Behavioral Health, our Mental Health Board the other day, and we recognized all the volunteers, went through a thing where all the volunteers were there and recognized all the work that the volunteers had done, and that's great. We appreciate the volunteers. But then I made the comment that we need to recognize the staff, too, because we've asked everybody to take, you know, now it's permanent 6% cuts, and it's because of those cuts that we're then able as a county to provide services to the public, more services that we wouldn't have been able to provide. You know, as it is, we continue to take, you know, away services. People pay their taxes and they say, you know, why don't I have this anymore? And it's a good question. We don't have the funds. But staff has taken cuts that's allowed the public to have more services. And I don't think that gets recognized very often. I think it, you know, everybody just thinks that the county is on the dole here. And But I really want to thank the staff for what they've done, and it really is allowing this county to be able to function better than it could if we hadn't have taken these cuts. So, again, I'm just repeating what everybody said here, but I really appreciate the staff and all they've done. And I'm going to support the budget here.
Okay. I think I can say the same things that have been up here, but I also need to say other things. I thank our staff and our employees tremendously for the personal sacrifices that they and their families have made in this tough economy. I think this is my 14th governmental budget, 14 years in a row. And I'm nervous on this one, guys. My stomach is in knots right now. And we're approaching what we see is finally hitting bottom. And I'm just nervous about some of these expenditures that we're making. And I expressed concern on one of them, the HVAC, for a building that we haven't decided how we're going to reuse it. But if we do reuse it, we're going to redesign it. And it's like the cart is before the horse on this one. We want to spend some money to buy some new vehicles and hire people to take care of those vehicles. Some of the reasoning in here is because of AB 109. Most of the AB 109 are custodial deputies who are at the jail, public safety center. With a number of employees that we've attritioned out or actually laid off, it's hard to believe we don't have vehicles in the county fleet that we can use. We talk about how landfill waste is reduced. We have a reduction of landfill waste. And we're having trouble meeting our budget with revenues on landfill waste. But we're going to hire someone because of workload. I was opposed to Public Works moving out to Morgan Road, vacating space down here. But now we got to buy a new modular building out there. I'm just nervous, and I don't know what to vote on this budget. We've had budgets before that we haven't liked because of the revenue that we had. We just didn't like the decision we were making. This one's got me nervous. So I don't know what I'm going to do, but I will entertain a motion at this time.
I'd like to make a motion that we accept the 15 staff recommendations.
And I will second that.
A motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No. Passes 4-1.
Thank you.
This time we'll move to correspondence.
This board has received a letter from Silgan Containers Manufacturing regarding their intention to conduct temporary layoffs at its facility located at 3250 Patterson Road, Riverbank, California, per the Worker Adjustment and Retraining Notification Act.
Refer to Alliance WorkNet and Stanislaus Economic Development and Workforce Alliance.
This board has received a claim for refund of property tax from Flight Options regarding fractionally owned aircraft assessments.
Refer to Auditor, Controller, Assessor, and Tax Collector.
This board has received a letter from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development regarding the approval of the program year 2012-2013 Annual Action Plan for the Stanislaus County Community Development Block Grant and the Emergency Solutions Grant.
Refer to Department of Planning and Community Development.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
We acknowledge receipt of claims and refer to Chief Executive Office, Risk Management Division. Are there any Board of Supervisor reports?
I just had one comment. Tonight will be the first city council meeting in Newman's new city hall.
Hey, all right. Very good.
That's the I have three cities in my district. Since I've been here, every one of them has gotten the new city hall.
So, redevelopment money?
Well, some of it. But in Newman's case, it's an older building, really nicely remodeled.
I have four cities, and none of them have gotten the new city hall. I just wanted to make comment on a couple of news articles that we saw on both the TV and the newspaper regarding animal services in the past week. Much happy with the second article that says that this county's not going to require a mandatory rabies reporting that then could be used, causing veterinarians to turn in their clients who don't have dogs licensed. So I'm very supportive of that decision by Animal Services. Legislative Fiscal Management Report, Chief Executive Officer.
Yes, Chair. The state legislature adjourned on August 31st for this year. Mm-hmm. The county has received a year-end report from Peterson Consulting on state bills, and staff will be working with Peter Consulting, and they'll be here on site on September 26th for legislative platform planning meetings with departments and to give a year-end report, which is very informative. Of particular note, AB 340, the pension reform bill, was passed. The bill is being evaluated by Stan Serra, along with the chief executive office. We are putting together a list of questions and other departments for local impacts. The State Association of County Retirement System, which is SACRS, is going to hold a workshop on 37 Act County Administrators to learn more about implementation on September 24th. The legislature front will be uneventful, probably until after the November election, depending on what happens on the governor's tax initiative, which is Prop 30. There will be swift calls for action to mitigate cuts if it does fail. This is also an extraordinary session for health care that has been called for December. On the federal side, both chambers will be back in session. Are back in session as of September 10th after the summer recess. There's been primarily both parties have been very focused on their conventions at this point. So thank you.
Okay. We do have closed session, County Council.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we have closed session to have conference with legal counsel to discuss existing litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9 Subdivision A. This involves one case conference with, one case involving NRA Municipal Derivatives Antitrust Litigation, MDL number 1950, Master Docket number 08-02516, United States District Court for the Southern District of New York. Additionally, we'll have a conference to discuss public employee appointment for the position of Director of Planning and Community Development. This will be held pursuant to Government Code Section 54957 Subdivision B.
This meeting is adjourned to closed session.